Listener Production.
This is Global Truths with Dr. Keith Suter. Join us every week as we break down an issue in global politics so that you can understand what's happening in the world right now, but also what is likely to happen in the future. Our host, Dr. Keith Suter, is one of Australia's leading commentators on global affairs and geopolitics. My name is Sasha Barbagat. I'm a journalist. University learning and degrees have become one of the only pathways to a high-earning job in Australia and indeed around the world. But is it the most practical way to prepare people for the workforce? That's been explored in a recent article by Thomas Frey on Futurist Speaker, which we'll be discussing on today's episode of Global Truths. Now, Keith, you work in universities. Do you think the system as it is working?
No, it's not. And if you look around the rest of society, there's just so much disruption going on. In the university sector, the really big disruption occurred a few decades ago, depending on which country you're looking at, when education suddenly became big business. We then started to charge high fees for students. University administrators suddenly, not teaching staff like me, but the administrators all became millionaires.
Wow.
Earning over $1 million a year in salary and their packages. We suddenly realised that education was a commodity that we could sell. In Australia's case, that began about 40 years ago. So we actually refer now to the export of education, which means that we bring people from overseas into this country. Before COVID closed Australia's boundaries, we had the export of education, in other words, teaching overseas students, as our third largest export industry. So you have coal, you have iron, and then you have education.
Mm.
In the case of the state of Victoria, it's number one.
Wow.
So Victoria now often refers to itself as the state of education because of the money which they make from that university sector. So that was certainly a very big change that occurred 40 years ago. And so students now are clients, they are consumers. It's almost as though we're selling them, I don't know, automobiles or legs of meat or whatever. We're now selling them education. So I'm on the lookout for new ways in which the education system will be disrupted. As I say, we see disruption everywhere else. Of course, a really big recent one was the arrival of COVID and then moving more on to online education. Again, that was an approach with long roots, going back into the history in Great Britain. In the 1960s, Harold Wilson's Labour government created the Open University, which was immortalised in a great movie called Educating Rita,
okay,
which you can see for free on YouTube. It's a very inspiring movie. So that meant that for the first time, people who left school at a young age, like this hairdresser, Rita, could actually study at home with printed material. Open University itself became the largest publishing house in the English-speaking world.
Wow.
And they worked with radio and television. So you'd get up early and you would get your lessons. So an interesting way of trying to educate people. And I think the Open University still carries on in this country. Obviously, the Conservatives, who all went through Oxford, despised this and thought this is an appalling thing. And they then promised that they would wind it up as soon as they returned to power. But then when they did return to power and they did the numbers, they realised that this was a great way of educating people. And so the Conservatives became supporters of the Open University as well as Labour. A brilliant achievement. So what we've now seen is the way that we've been able to augment that system of learning. And now, of course, we're using YouTube, etc. And the author of this article, Thomas Frey, is saying, well, can we not do things differently in the case of university education? Remember, the only thing that university education gives you, which is unique, is an actual bit of paper, right? You can get everything else elsewhere. You can get the actual education, the content of what you're learning. One of the values of university, in my view, is networking, the development of what is called social capital. You just make the right sort of contacts, etc. Well, you can perhaps now do that online through Facebook and other social media, etc. I'm not sure it's as good as what we're able to achieve at university, but you can certainly do that. But the monopoly is on the actual issuing of a bit of paper saying you have a degree.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that's left.
Yeah, exactly. And you just touched on it then. Frey explores the idea that people are constantly learning things. You know, I could sit down and listen to 8 podcasts, watch 3 TED Talks on a particular issue. And Frey argues that that could make me more qualified to talk on an issue than a recent uni graduate, in theory. Would you agree with this idea of trying to find ways to give people credit for information that they're taking on outside of a lecture hall?
Well, that's exactly what he's arguing. And that's why he talks about this notion of equivalency. So the article is called Inventing the College Equivalency Scale. I have to say for an Australian audience that in the United States, we refer to university as college.
Yes.
A university sounds far too grand for the American point of view. So I work at Boston University, but actually in conversations have to refer to the college.
The college.
Rather than the university.
Yeah, yeah.
So what this fellow is saying is, look, people are now learning in a variety of ways. As you say, you've got all these podcasts that are on, you can read books online, got all the TED Talks, etc. Why not find a way of creating an equivalency system? He says here, on average, Americans subscribe to 12 paid media subscriptions and spend a huge amount of time watching television, reading books, listening to podcasts, and absorbing digital content. And none of this day-to-day learning is credentialed in any way. In other words, you're putting all that effort in, but you're not being rewarded. Now, of course, some of that effort will go to watching cat videos or whatever.
Of course. Absolutely. Balance, Keith.
So what he is saying is that we're now at a critical junction in the future of higher education. Any person or institution that comes up with a better way to prepare people for careers, either within a college environment or outside of it, will be a hero to many. And the first step towards making a disruptive shift like this will be the creation of college equivalency scale. So in other words, if you do spend time watching TED Talks, you need to receive some sort of micro credit for it. Now, one of the things that I've looked at over the years is micro credentialing.
Okay.
Instead of going to university as an undergraduate for 3 to 4 years, you could just do micro courses. Universities hate this idea. Remember, they like their idea of having you for 3 or 4 years on the campus.
Lock you in. Yeah.
But if you think about the time that you had as an undergraduate and then what you're actually applying to do your job, you know, you spent 3 or 4 years and you only use a fraction of that for your work. So a lot of that, you are actually paying for something that you're never going to use.
Well, I know personally when I started university in a media course, they wanted you to take on a science unit and I think they called it a society unit. And so I was sitting there going to uni to learn to be a journalist, but they're teaching me about, you know, space. Don't get me wrong, I love that unis offer a well-rounded education, but really, is it preparing people for the workforce?
And that's exactly, and that's why, particularly nowadays, the current generation of students have a limited time span. Well, you've got to be very careful when you recommend that they read books. Some will actually boast that they don't read books now.
Wow.
It's a whole new world that's out there. And what they want is education, which is direct and to the point. So they don't want to be going off at a tangent learning about outer space if they want to be a journalist, unless they want to specialise in science journalism.
Well, the other thing I did, I actually left uni. I don't have a degree.
Ah!
I got a diploma. I went to a private college, which, you know, that's an issue in terms of how much money they charge.
Yeah.
However, it did put me in touch with industry contacts, and that's how I got my internships. And then I got a job. So I'd already learnt before I'd hit the workforce because I'd worked for free as an intern. And I like Frey's point about the need for hyper-individualized learning. For me, learning on the job was so much more important. What else does he say about that sort of approach?
So what he's talking about, the weakness of the system is what he calls situational awareness. In other words, knowing the context in which you're actually operating. And universities are not good for that. And universities don't teach soft skills. The distinction between a hard skill and a soft skill is that a hard skill are the nuts and bolts of getting a law degree. The soft skill are how you actually treat clients.
Mm.
Now, the medical fraternity has been under a lot of criticism because they attract the best performing academics, but they've got no human connection. So you've got this automaton telling you, sorry, you've only got a year to live. The University of Newcastle here in New South Wales pioneered new ways of trying to recruit potential doctors as a way of, you know, showing empathy, etc.
Mm.
There is that real problem that universities have limitations. Now, the universities will reply by saying, well, we are now, in the American case, every undergraduate has to do an internship.
Yeah, which is, I think, is great.
Which is great. You get to learn the real stuff there. That is certainly an issue that he raises here. Now, what he's done is to list a number of what he calls already in the United States, well-accepted non-traditional paths for evaluating a person's proficiency. So you've got the General Education Development, a GED certification, which is a high school equivalency diploma that confirms that a student has mastered a basic maths or reading, social sciences, writing skills. And this is a program offered through a non-profit organization, the American Council of Education. Now, I'm not sure that we have anything quite equivalent to that here in Australia, but it also provides training courses to prepare people for the GED tests covered by these scoring areas. So that's for people who are stuck in high school. There's also the whole issue of apprenticeships. As you may know, we have an apprenticeship crisis in this country. Mm. There's a shortage of people actually learning good trade skills because of the snobbery associated with going to university.
That's right.
But you're going to cost you an arm and a leg to get a plumber or a carpenter. That's the problem, that we've made universities such a sacrosanct way of life that we encourage children to get into university. Whereas I think we should be following more the German example of encouraging people to get apprenticeships. A third issue is the whole question of certifications. So in other words, that colleges are now offering certifications that allow a student to immediately focus on specialized marketable skill development, which is much more in keeping with what I was saying about micro education. So in other words, instead of doing a 3 or 4 year degree course, you just zero in on what you actually need to learn for a particular job. And then finally, there's a process called credits by examination. Again, remember, this is an American survey in which participating colleges allow students to test out usually entry-level classes by passing a proficiency test administered by one of the several national recognized organizations. So in other words, you could be getting in there by just taking one of these tests to show that, you know, you've already got the skills. Okay, you don't have a bit of paper.
Mm.
The really big breakthrough, in my view, about this fixation that I've got with bits of paper will be when you end up with banks, IT houses, etc., simply saying, we don't need you to come to us with a degree. We will train you.
Mm.
In other words, at the age of 18, instead of going on for another 3 to 4 years of study, you go to work for an organization that will train you specifically on the latest thinking. You get that already with McDonald's.
Yes.
There is a McDonald's U
university
yes. in the United States. So they are obviously preparing people for that new way of life.
You're listening to Global Truths with Dr. Keith Suter. Thanks for your company this week as we discuss how a university education could evolve in the future. Now, we've been talking about all these great ideas, but how long do you think it'll take to filter through to the mainstream?
It's going to take an awfully long time because I think that people have become so obsessed with getting university degrees. And even in your introductory remarks, you said you've got to get a degree to get a well-paying job.
Yeah.
So that's all part of this environment in which school students being educated, thinking they've got to go to university. And the tragedy is if they don't go to university, they'll then think, well, they've been a failure. Whereas we've got to be able to give second and third chances to people to be able to learn, which is what the British Open University was all about 60 years ago. You've got to give people that opportunity to opt in at later points in their life. Because my own view is that education is a lifelong process. It's not something that's over and done with at the age of 21 or 22.
Mm.
And you've got to find ways of remaining within the educational environment. As you say, you can do that through TED Talks, podcasts, etc. So this fellow has argued that there are key components of a college equivalency scale. So he says one is micro credits for assessing micro accomplishments. So he says that perhaps we could work it out in such a way that 100 micro credits will equal one traditional college semester credit. So you're doing a series of small jobs.
Yeah.
Already I do that anyway. As a company director, I'm obliged to do CPD points, continuing professional development, and I have to earn a certain number of points each year. So in a sense, that's its own form of micro-assessment. So in a sense, we are working towards that. What he's saying is you could actually do it in the university context, not just in terms of director responsibilities. A second one, he talks about the phrase you've already used, the need for hyper-individualized learning.
Mm.
In other words, we can now tailor education to each student in the same way that in the medical field, we're going to be able to tailor medicines specifically to the health issues of an individual. Because of the improvements in artificial intelligence and elsewhere, we can make an assessment. Oh, what you need will be the following that you've got to follow through on, rather than getting a 3 or 4 year degree course. Number three talks about the need for universal acceptance. So in other words, that unlike the rigid acceptance policies used by elite colleges and universities today, our next generation education system will need to be capable of working with the full spectrum of potential users. And that's interesting because when I reflect on my time at the University of New South Wales teaching social work as a master's degree, one of the best students was somebody who didn't have a university qualification. She was a mature age nurse who was a product of the era when you learned nursing in a hospital environment rather than a university environment. Mm. So she was clearly educated in nursing, but without a formal bit of paper. And she was the best performing person in the class. So we need to find a way of just broadening out this notion of eligibility. And then finally, which is the really controversial one, I think, is that we will need to establish a universally accepted equivalency scale based on microcredits. In other words, if you do watch a TED Talk, how much of a credit should you get for that TED Talk?
Gotcha.
The argument is that the equivalency scale would then add hundreds of levels beyond PhD onto the accomplishment scale. So those of us who've got 3 PhDs, that's not enough now. You've got to go on to get even more. So what he is talking about then is a different way of making use of education. The argument I make is that we will always need to have education until, of course, the robots take over.
Of course.
And then, you know, who knows what happens then around 2050. But so we always need to be education, but will there always be need for universities? Mm. That's the challenge. Universities have got to make themselves relevant for this new era. And this is what this person is trying to argue. But as I say, if you talk to academics, there's real resistance to micro-credentialing, et cetera.
So I guess we'll have to wait and see on that one then, won't we?
Exactly.
Thank you, Keith, for your company this week. See you next week.
Thank you.
Global Truths is presented by Dr. Keith Suter and me, Sasha Barber-Gatt. Audio production by Niall Fernandez. Theme and original music by Matt Nikolic. Listener.